Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
And Verona gets it out for Kuznetsov, who could not hold the pass at center. Slid back in. And now here's Forsberg breaking in. He scores! Matt Duchene sets up another. It's 1-1. Tipped onto the board for Yarncroke. Yarncroke down the right wing with it. Breaking in. Arvidsson with Johansson. Johansson scores! Johansson, right circle, drags it, shoots it. And then Arvidsson with the try. And the Predators put in the rebound. Here's Forsberg now, left circle, and Matt Duchene scores! Matt Duchene ties it up! To the side of the net, trying to put it in front by Sissons, and he tipped it in! Nick Bonino in front, it's 5-5! Yarncroke got in the way, Yarncroke spins on that left board, to the blue line, Ekholm, the shot, he scores! Matthias Ekholm gives the Predators back! 5 seconds to go. Kuznetsov with it. 2 seconds. Dumps a shot in, and that's it. What a comeback tonight by Nashville.
And we welcome you into Morning Drive live here on a Friday. Nick Braden, D-Mace, Marquise, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You heard it last night right here on 102.5 The Game. Pete Weber with the call on the Predators Radio Network. As the Nashville Predators rally from a 4-2 deficit after two periods and score a four spot in the final 20 minutes, picking up a 6-5 win over the Capitals.
Stanley, we're calling you. Stanley, come out and play.
God, sounds like a horror movie.
Not to get it confused with Stanley from Friday. Stanley Cup.
Sounds like
Stanley, come out and play.
Sounds like a clown is asking for children to come out and get some candy.
Yeah, the Stanley is lurking around a corner.
Stanley, come home. Dinner's ready.
The Stanley is around a corner. It's early on, so we get the it's Friday, so we can overreact.
So Jeremy Pruitt said.
Yeah, I'm going to overreact again right now. Pecorino should never be in the net again. He gave up 5 goals. Where's Soros? Okay, Pekka should never be in the net again. I'm done.
So you're flipping.
I'm flipping. I'm done. Soros should start the remainder of the game. What is it, 70-some games, 79, 78 games left?
Right.
Soros should start every game from here on out. Pecorino, sit on the bench. Your time is up.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton.
Yeah. But it's overreaction. Yeah. Friday. Yeah. So, yeah. No, people, I'm just kidding. I don't want nobody to call Sean Henry. And, he called me. Sean, I'm just playing. This team is – we spoke with Skillsy. Can I call him Skillsy?
The poll results revealed that. Two-thirds of the people.
So you just changed because you were the one that was against it, and now you're the first one calling him Skillsy.
You perpetrator, you.
No, but Skillsy, we asked him that question yesterday, or at least I did, that this, for some reason, it just seems like this thing, from a scoring standpoint anyway, this thing is kind of flowing, and the puck is moving seamlessly through the ice, and guys are getting it from one guy to the other, and they're putting it on net as quickly as possible. And it was evident yesterday. I mean, at one point when they were down 4-2, they scored 2 goals in less than it was like a minute and something between each goal. And then once they tied up, they go again with another 2-hitter in less than, 40 seconds?
Mm-hmm.
That shows you the firepower. They are – I'm calling them the Kansas City Chiefs of the NHL right now because they are able to put up goals in bunches. Those guys, I mean, they – I don't know what it is about them.
So does, does that make Matt Duchene the Patrick Mahomes because he's the trigger man?
Duchene's the Mahomes, and then we have a bunch of other guys that just, man, they just – It's a good thing to see, and I don't think we saw a little bit of this last year at the beginning of the year, but then guys ended up getting hurt. But I don't think it ever flowed this smoothly, as far as being able to score and being able to guys setting up other guys, and it doesn't seem like they're fighting and grinding for a goal. It's like okay. It's time to pick it up, and they end up, doing what they do best and putting the ball on net and scoring. So, I mean, they never gave up. And, again, I know it's early, but I think this – I believe in momentum. And if they can continue to do this, they'd be one of the better teams in the National Hockey League last night.
I mean, right now, who wouldn't want to sign up for Preds and Caps Stanley Cup Final?
Yeah, that would be an awesome Stanley Cup,
it would be a
man.
Fire Goodness. Series.
So, it's kudos to the Preds because they put that sucker in fifth gear and they roll with it that third and fourth period. Third period.
Yeah, 19 goals in four games. That's almost five per game. I'm not good at math, but it's almost five per game, which is, you can't keep that up. It's not possible. But you now have Matt Duchene with 8 points, got his first tally last night in a big spot on what was one of the most beautiful hockey plays I've seen all season. Mikael Granlund goes into the boards, pinches, takes the puck away, feeds it across to Forsberg, who does a little dipsy-doo in the slot with a beautiful backhand slide over to Duchene, and then Duchene finishes. And you're like, oh, that's why that guy's making $8 million. That's why that guy's making 5.75, and that's why that guy's making $6 million. That's why that line is working so well. It's just an unbelievable play. And then they continued to grind. And frankly, the defense let them down a lot last night. I mean, they would fight back and get it tied, and then the Caps would take a lead. Then the Caps would go up 4-2. Then they'd fight back and make it 4-4. Then the Caps would take a lead 5-4. Then they'd fight back and tie it up, and then Mattias Ekholm with the blast from the point gets it in there, and they go 6-5. And listen, one of the things just through four games without overreacting, certainly you guys have already addressed the offense. The one thing that I have taken away now sort of on a four-game, like looking – stepping back and looking at all four games, they've trailed in every game outside of the game Tuesday night against San Jose. They have shown a ton of resiliency. The ability to come back from leads is a really important characteristic and trait to build up over time. You want to build that up over the course of an 82-game season, the ability to, hey, when you're down a goal or even two like last night, that it's not that big, you don't feel out of it, that you still feel confident in your abilities. That's a really good positive trait to have going into the playoffs. You also don't always want to be playing from behind. That's not necessarily what you want to do. So defensively last night, of course, you got to work on some stuff. And, Ovechkin was just at times superhuman, drawing penalties and creating plays. And that's just sort of what he does. You have to take that for what it is. So one of the big takeaways for me last night, outside of the fact that like six guys are on pace for a point per game, which is insane. We were asking questions before the year, like, hey, could Forsberg be a point-per-game guy? Who else? I don't know. Well, there's six of them right now that are on pace for a point per game. Mm-hmm. Arvidsson's got 4 points. Ekholm's got 4 points. Josi's got 4 points. Johansson's got two goals and three assists. Forsberg's got 4 goals and 2 assists. And Duchene, of course, 7 apples and a goal. They're all on pace for more than 82 points. So, again, we can have a little fun with tracking that. But the offense has been spectacular.
Definitely.
What a comeback win.
Definitely a calm resiliency to this team. It doesn't seem like anything seems to faze them because they know they're that good and they can rally back and flip a switch. And it's not just, oh, we can flip a switch. Yeah. We do flip a switch. Like last year we were saying, okay, when are they going to flip the switch? When are they going to flip the switch? Well, they do it, and they've done it so far through four games, picking up 6 of a possible 8 points. You talk about the points per game and the balance and the offense. This was the screenshot on Fox Sports Tennessee last night prior to the game. 13 goals in their first three, which was most in franchise history. 16 of 19 skaters have registered a point, 8 players with at least 2 points, and 9 players with at least 1 goal. I mean, they can run 4 lines deep with guys that have firepower.
Yeah, listen, and like Bonino comes up with a huge goal last night where I'm not even sure if he saw it. It just was I'm going to bust it to get to the middle of the net. I'm going to stand here, and I'm going to have my stick on the ice and hope that the puck hits me. And got a great delivery there and puts it in the back of the net. And you're just kind of going, oh, my gosh, how did that happen? So it just a great, great hockey game. You know, from a regular season standpoint, East-West Conference opponents there. You know, some rivalry there between Washington and Nashville, certainly with the Barry Trotz, old Barry Trotz combination. But, man, that game seems to always be really good when these two teams get together. And last night, what a roller coaster for Bridgestone Arena. I mean, if you're a fan that was at that game, you had to have had a great time because that was, you know, up and down and up and down and back and forth. So just an absolute – just so much fun and even better when you come out on top. But – you know, you can't be giving up five goals, and you can't be giving up multiple leads and multiple goal leads because you're not normally going to come back from those.
Two goals from Ryan Johansson, and then single goals from Philip Forsberg, Matias Ekholm, Nick Bonino, Matt Duchene. And again, we're talking about that, quote, second line, although it might be the first line or it might be 1A and 1B. But the bottom line, Philip Forsberg, Matt Duchene, that connection, they look like they've been playing together for a dozen years.
Yeah, and Granlund, too. I mean, don't forget, Granlund's going to be the forgotten guy because Forsberg is so well thought of, and Duchene was the big acquisition, the prize that they have coveted for years. But Granlund is a totally different player from the games he played last year. Now, he also, if you remember, I think when he was acquired last year, I think it was like not only his birthday, but also the day his wife gave birth.
Yep.
So, like, the energy and pace and tempo with which he's playing right now is far different than what we saw last year. Some of that's comfortable and just being comfortable with your line mates, but he's playing just as well. The number of chances he had last night that didn't go in because he's playing with those two guys, he's a buzzsaw right now all over the ice as well. It's not just Forsberg and Duchene.
I think they're all, whether it be the first line, second line, third, or fourth, they're all playing their role to the T. They're all doing something to impact the game in a positive way. I think it's all rubbing off on one another. I almost see it as a healthy competition between the lines, you know, because it's like, okay, you did this, I want to do this.
Yeah, you're competing for ice time.
Yeah, you're competing for ice time. So it's this healthy competition between, sure, you know, between the lines. And that's what you want to have. I think that's what helps make teams, the good teams, become the great teams because they're competing with one another in a good way.
Yeah, it's like Oklahoma wide receivers.
Exactly.
Like Oklahoma wide receivers are always like, oh, you went seven catches for 120 yards? I got to get mine.
Exactly.
And they just, you know, Lincoln Riley says, okay, you run wide open, and you run wide open.
You get a touchdown, and you get a touchdown.
Like Oprah, just passing out Heismans. You get a Heisman, and you get a Heisman.
All right, Preds fans, if you want to jump in, your reaction from last night's exhilarating come-from-behind win, 737-1025, the number, 615-737-1025. We have an action-packed show this morning. Josh Ward is going to join us. Teron Davenport's going to stop by. D Mace has got his dissection of the All 22. I already see the laptop is up. So we got a lot to do this morning. Your reaction to the Preds. Also, your thoughts, Titans, Broncos. We've got college football, the SEC. Busy Friday morning. We're coming back right after this Preds calls, and then we'll delve into the Titans and the Broncos coming up on Sunday. It's Morning Drive. We are live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. 617, welcome back into Morning Drive. Nick Braden, D-Mace, Marquise, live here on an action-packed Friday edition. Titans and the Broncos we'll get to in just a second, but we do have a bone to pick with one of our favorite guests on the show each and every week, and it's our buddy Chris Mason, who last night during the broadcast was reading a promo for Fox Sports Tennessee, and he pronounced the city of Louisville, which is how I would say it.
You have to say it like you have a bag of marbles in your mouth.
Louisville.
Louisville.
He called it Louisville.
Oh, God. I feel like we should
and Willie Donick immediately was like, yeah, that's wrong.
I feel like we should wait so that we know he's listening, because we know he listens. And we should wait to do this until I think we know. In fact, we should all text him and be like, hey, check out the – you're going to want to tune in next segment. So I think we should rip him.
I mean, far be it for me to throw stones. It took me a year to figure out how to pronounce my college quarterback's last name in Tua Tagovailoa.
Yeah.
So I really can't.
That's a pretty hard name to pronounce, though. Like
Louisville.
That one's pretty rough.
Sorry, Willie. That's the Canada in me.
Well, it's not like the thing is you could. That's like the second worst. Because you could say Louisville. You could say Louisville.
Right.
or you could say Louisville. So, like, Louisville's not even, like, Louisville is the one that's still technically correct, but also wrong at the same time. Louisville's just not even close. It's just not even in the same category.
Like, Louisville is in Texas. That
yeah, right, right. Like, it's spelled with a W. There's a W in there. Like, people say Louisville. People say that, Louisville Slugger. Mm-hmm. You know, people say Louisville, which is not how the locals pronounce it. It's Louisville.
That is correct.
Louisville. You got to say it like, again, just put a bag of marbles in your mouth. Louisville. Cookeville. Crossville. Knoxville.
The Fighting Stillmans.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad that Willie caught him on it, too. That's good.
Oh, he checked him right away.
Yeah, yeah.
It was good.
It's good.
So Josh Ward will join us coming up at the bottom of the hour. Loaded show today. Titans and the Broncos coming up on Sunday. And I, for one, literally, and I'm being dead honest when I say this, I don't know how this game will come playing out. Like, I am literally 0-for-5 picking Titans games this year. Not against the spread, but straight up. Every time I say they're going to win or lose, the opposite happens. I have no idea what to expect Sunday.
Let me throw a few numbers at you guys here. Just see what you think. Joe Flacco, 2-3 all-time in the regular season against the Tennessee Titans. 61% of his passes, not a whole lot of yardage there. 5.8 yards per attempt for Joe Flacco in 175 attempts in five games. That means he's averaged 35 pass attempts per game against the Titans. That's the fifth worst number of his career against any opponent. Listen, he threw the ball 52 times in a loss 2 years ago for the Ravens. He threw the ball 37 times last year in the win. The Broncos don't want him throwing the ball that much. And Derek, I know you're going to do your dissection later. I don't know.
No, I'm not. We're going to talk prayers.
I don't know. Still 78 games to go, guys. I don't know if what they're asking him to do at Denver is far different than what Baltimore asked him to do. But he averaged 35 pass attempts a game against the Titans for his career in the five games that he played against them, and just never. You know, never more than 6.4 yards per attempt. He just never picks up big yards for them. And the Broncos clearly want to run the football with Lindsey and Freeman. So if the Titans can turn this into a Joe Flacco throwing the ball kind of game, I feel like that is what they want to do. Because I think the Broncos want to keep Joe limited. 20 pass attempts, 25 pass attempts at the most, they want to be handing the football off. So if the Titans can turn them into an offense that has to throw the football, they've gotten out to two big leads lately, the Broncos. They got out to a big lead, 17-0 halftime lead last week, let the Chargers come back, 17-6 halftime lead on Jacksonville the week before, let Jacksonville come back. They've had good hot starts, and that allows Joe Flacco not to throw the football. This is a huge first quarter for the Titans, because if you can get a lead, you're forcing Joe Flacco to throw the football, and that's not what the Denver Broncos want them to do.
I mean, you look at this, and Mace, I'm trying to figure out just – you know, last week, the Titans looked awful. The Broncos looked like world beaters as an 0-4 team, taking it to the Chargers. So I'd like to think the NFL is one of these leagues where as soon as you think you have either team figured out, they flip the script on you. So that would lead to Tennessee bouncing back this week and Denver showing us why they're 1-4. But, I mean, I the one thing I can guarantee is that the Titans will come out with an energy level. I don't know if they'll execute. I don't know if they'll protect Mariota. But they should certainly have a little piss and vinegar to their step after the week they had this past week.
Yeah, I mean, it's the offensive line's getting ridiculed. You know, they hadn't been able to, you know, generate points the last, you know, few weeks. This team, you know, it's this, like we said yesterday, it's one of those games that they got to have. And not to say it's a, you know, it's a must win, but it is sort of.
They will not be eliminated from the playoffs if they lose.
It's sort of this is a win they need, you know, after how they start off, how they started off the season, first four games. They need this win. And going down to Denver is going to be tough. You know, the Titans have to stop the run because Royce Freeman and Phillip Lindsay, they're probably one of the, if not the best 1-2 punch in the National Football League right now.
And they run violently.
Yeah. So they got
to. They like to run the ball.
Denver is going to try to run it with that zone blocking. They're going to try to run the football.
They're, yeah, especially inside zone team. Think about, look at these rushing numbers defensively for the Denver Broncos. This is their game log so far in five games. Last week, they got up 35 yards rushing. That's insane. The week before, 269 to Jacksonville. Then 77 in week three, 153 in week two, and 98 yards rushing in week one. They're either, it's feast or famine with their rushing defense. They're, mm-hmm. they're either completely dominant, and you're getting less than 80 yards rushing, and you've been stopped, or they're just getting completely boat raced. And again, 270 yards rushing to Jacksonville and 153 in week two allowed. There's no, if the trend holds firm, that they'll, if they're alternating great and poor defensive showings against the run, this week tells you that the Titans should be able to run the football. Again, I think they're going to be keying on Derrick Henry. I think the Titans are keying on Lindsay and Freeman. So it comes down to which defense can run the can stop the run. And certainly the Titans have, you know, look, they're, neither team are elite at stopping the run. But they've had their moments of looking good. And so it's this is one of those where you said, Nick, it's just we don't have any idea how any of the individual matchups go. I like the Titans secondary and Dean Pease against Joe Flacco. So to me, if they need to load up and stop the run and allow and force Joe Flacco to throw the football, that feels like the best approach on defense.
Tell me if you guys agree with this take. I'm thinking about this week, but I'm also looking ahead to next week. Not from a game plan standpoint with the Chargers, but from what that stadium will look like next week, I think if the Titans lose on this Sunday against the Denver Broncos, the following week against the Chargers, you're going to see the emptiest Nissan Stadium has ever been in the John Robinson era of football. And the reason I say that is Titans fans looking at their team 2-4, and then also the Chargers, who, by the way, have no home field advantage, much less a fan base that travels. You're not going to see it like the Colts or the Texans or the Packers or the Eagles where the opposing team comes into your stadium. Next week, if they lose to Denver, Titans, Chargers, Nissan Stadium, ghost town.
Well, it's going to be, if they do lose, I mean, it does, you know, it's like a gut punch to the fan base, because now you come back home, you know, 2-4, and now you got to dig yourself out of a hole. Coming back, you know, 3-3.
Bless you.
Bless me. Coming back with a...
Can you bless yourself?
Yeah, I think you can.
Yeah, Quinton Williams does it.
Yeah.
But he played 15 years in the league,
Quinton Williams? Like the rookie for the Jets?
Yeah. He did an interview, and he, like, sneezed, and he said, bless me. And
then he also did an interview where he stopped dead in the middle of his tracks and realized he was like, nah, I'm good.
Because he saw Nick Saban on his shoulder.
Nah, I'm good.
Kyler Murray's not really...
Nah,
yeah, he can play. Good. Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, but this is a game. Coming back 3-3 rather than 2-4 is big. The perception it gives the fans. It gives the fans this team still have hope. If they come back with a loss, a lot of fans, I might just think, I believe a lot of fans, if indeed that is the case, a lot of fans are going to, you know, here we go again.
This is not hockey, okay? This is not hockey where
it's
you
not
have
82 games.
This is not hockey where you have a huge win and everybody's up and you win and it's great, but then you have to ignore it and disappear and move on from it because you have a huge game the very next day. Tomorrow night, you've got to go on the road this weekend and play another hockey game. So you cannot dwell on a big comeback win over the Capitals. You have to just move on. It's not the same in football. You come back from as a 2-4 deficit, and you spend a week thinking about it and a week looking at yourself, watching film, listening to people talk about your team. It's so different from, you know, had the Preds not come back and won last night, I don't think anything – all right, we'd go, okay, that's not good. That's not a good win. But, like, I got another chance to – you get right back on the ice 2 days later. And so it's you have to forget about stuff in hockey real fast. And in football, it's different. It's – you got to move on mentally, but don't tell me it doesn't linger for 5-6 days where you're just having to deal with the conversation, right, about who you are as a team. It's very, very different in the NFL and in college even more so when you only have 12 cracks at it versus the NHL where, okay, great comeback win last night. What does it mean? Now,
it means you got to win. That's it.
Yeah, you got your 2 points. It's time to move on, and it doesn't matter.
The world didn't stop. You know, there's no parades. They got a great comeback win. And that's what it was. And in the NFL, I mean, if you lose by 100 or win by 100, you're able to soak in it a little bit longer. But the bad part about it is if you lose, you get to soak in it.
You're wallowing, yeah.
Exactly. You get to soak in it. Whereas you know, some of these other sports that play a bunch of games. And right now, hockey, it's like, yes, we had a great win. Everybody's happy, but it doesn't mean a thing if they then lose the next day. You know, it's like, okay, it's this roller coaster of emotions. Let's just keep it even keel and great win, you know, when you play 82 games. And but when you don't have that many games in other sports, it's like, oh, man. Whew, that was a tough loss. Now I got to sit here and hear everybody like, talk about how bad we are.
Every possession against Denver is huge.
Exactly.
Like that's what it comes down to is, you know, the Titans are, the second worst team in the NHL right now in terms of three and outs. They're going three and out on offense more than every other team in the league except for one. You got to stop that kind of stuff. Like it's going to be every possession in the first half. The Broncos have gotten out to, as I said earlier, the Broncos have gotten out to big leads in each of the last two games and allowed teams to come back. You've got to stop that trend if you're the Titans. You've got to play well in the first quarter, which means no three and outs. Even if you don't score, you've got to at least sustain some drives, keep possession, allow your defense to rest a little bit because, it's going to be another one of those defensive struggles where both teams are playing well on that side of the ball. And, of course, we say that, and then it's going to turn out to be a 31-27 game. But, you know, smart on paper football analysis tells you this is going to be another low scoring game where both teams want to run the football and both defensive coordinators, both well-respected defensive coordinators, are going to be looking to stop that run and force the quarterback to make plays.
All right, coming up next, can the Tennessee Volunteers get on the board as far as the conference victory? We'll talk to our buddy Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville. That's coming up next on Morning Drive. All right, welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5. The game, Nick Braden, D-Mace, Marquise with you here on a Football Friday. Hopefully we hear this song plenty tomorrow as the Vols are about a touchdown home dog to Mississippi State.
Come on, have some faith, Braden. Come on, man.
But, you know,
they played a lot in the pregame, a lot of halftime.
You'll probably hear the song regardless of the score.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
But as far as touchdowns go, we'll see.
All right. We'll see if Brian Maurer can change that perception. We welcome in our buddy Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville. Josh, if the Vols lose tomorrow, do you plan on sleeping on top of a car dealership on a roof for a couple of days?
No, my buddy Tyler Ivins has that locked down. So I ran it by my wife to see, hey, you know, what if I go up there and hang out with Tyler for a little while and you guys probably know the look I received. So here I am talking to you, and I'm nowhere near the roof of a car dealership. But by the way, you know, it's set up right next to the interstate, so he's still broadcasting there each day on our station, and it is it's not quiet up there on the roof right next to I-40.
No, and I've been to that dealership, Josh, and it's like I know how close the interstate is, and the interstates are lit up at night, which means there's no way that dude's sleeping at night at all outside in Knoxville October weather, although it's been rather warm. Let's get to the game itself, and I want to ask you about the quarterback. You know, one guy's got 26 starts for Jared Garantano right now under his belt. I know Brian Maurer sort of injected some energy into the first half offense against Georgia, but is there any reason to go back at all to the veteran in these must-win situations, or are you just now at this stage of the season trying to learn what you've got in Brian Maurer moving forward? What is the priority for Jeremy Pruitt and Jim Chaney at quarterback?
Well, it's a good question because Jeremy Pruitt has continued to talk about Garantano staying ready and that he's probably going to be needed to help Tennessee. And he says that for a number of reasons. One, Maurer could just get hurt. He got knocked out of the game for a brief moment last week, and Garantano had to go in and threw a nice pass and came back out. And then Maurer threw an interception. And then that can be the other part. What if he doesn't come out and play as well? Talking about Maurer. What if he comes out and struggles at times? Or what if he really hits a cold spell like he did against Georgia? The offense can't do anything like it couldn't in the third quarter last week. I don't think Jeremy Pruitt would really hesitate to make another move if he believes Maurer's not getting it done. Now, going into the game, Maurer is the clear starter and should be, and they've got to see if they can build on what he did last week. And their hope is that he plays four quarters and they get out of there with the win, and there's even more to build on moving forward. But I think Jeremy Pruitt still is concerned about some of the turnover issues and how Brian Maurer deals with pressure because he didn't deal with it well last week at all, and they need to see improvement there. But they're going to give him a chance to improve, and the focus has been on getting him ready to be the guy to lead Tennessee's offense.
Now, this team, looking at their schedule, looking at the way they played last week against Georgia, that second half was just, you know, they completely couldn't get anything generated. And if they can't pick up a win here with Mississippi State, Where is the other wins on this schedule? And I know we look at Vandy, and that's probably the only win moving forward in regards to the SEC. Now, they have UAB left on their schedule, but as far as the SEC, if they can't pick up a win against Mississippi State other than Vandy, do you see this team, you know, ending the season with just one, possibly one win within the conference?
Possibly. It's difficult to feel great about Tennessee's chances with many of the games remaining in the league, especially if Tennessee were to lose this week. This is just one Tennessee has to have, because you can start to play the cumulative effect game. If Tennessee loses this week, then the Vols are about to be 1-6 because they play on the road against Bama next week. So you're at 1-6 coming back home to play South Carolina, and South Carolina's not a great team. That's a winnable game, but South Carolina would be favored in that one. And you're coming off the Bama game. Where are you physically? Depth is already a concern for the team. And then where are you mentally? If at that point you're still looking for your first SEC win, Tennessee will have had 8 straight losses against FBS opponents going back to last year, including the Missouri and Vandy games to close out the season. So you don't want to put too much on one game in the middle of the season, but considering how Tennessee's season has gone and what the talk has been around the program and what you have coming up next, I just don't see any way around this one. Tennessee has to get this game, and getting to a bowl game has to be a goal still for the team. It's a remarkable long shot, but if they're going to have any kind of chance, then realistically they have to win on Saturday as well, because if they're 1-6, asking that team to win 5 straight to close it out is pretty much an impossibility. So that's why I would come back to, where's the team mentally at that point? Beating Mississippi State doesn't fix everything, but it sure could hold off some of the problems that could come with a loss.
Now, if they don't pick up a victory this week, looking at their schedule, let's just say if they get one victory within the conference, you're talking, you know, no more than 2 or 3 wins in the last 2 years. Is this program, take away the history, I'm talking about where it is now, is this program one of the worst programs in Power Five? I'm not talking facilities or, you know, the money they have aside. I'm just saying what's on the field, the product, the last couple of years. Is this possibly one of the worst programs in Power Five football?
The product on the field, the results would say yes. You would grade a little bit on the curve because of the competition, but if I say that, you can also come back to me with, yeah, but they also lost to Georgia State, and they lost at home to BYU, and that would be true. It's a team that, or a program, I guess, that 2 years ago didn't win in the SEC, went 4-8. Last year went 5-7. It's also the blowout losses. Last week was Jeremy Pruitt's 8th loss by 25 or more points, going back to the start of last season. So with the way that Tennessee has played in games that it should win, and then, of course, against the top competition, the way that it's just blown out Tennessee, the Vols have shown up as a team that other programs can't wait to face. And if you lose to Mississippi State, if that's the conversation we're having, that just adds to it. So for so many reasons, yeah, put that one on there as well. You want to avoid being considered one of the worst Power Five programs in the country right now, especially if you're trying to go out on the recruiting trail and get more players to help you in the future. That would be another reason that you don't want to lose this week.
Josh, let's look at the flip side of this. Tennessee defensively and what they have to go against with Mississippi State offensively. We've seen Joe Moorhead having issues at quarterback this year, whether it's Tommy Stevens or Garrett Schrader. How do you think the Vols match up on that side of the ball against the Joe Moorhead offense?
Well, Tennessee's defense needs to be better this week at trying to make tackles and slow down Kylan Hill. That's where it starts. It's just such a terrific player, and this is the kind of game where he has to be fired up. He's had 2 weeks to get ready, so probably a little fresher. He's great after contact. Tennessee has had problems at times, especially last week, in bringing guys down. And, yeah, if Schrader's out there, that's something to pay attention to as well with his running ability. Tennessee is dealing with some depth issues at linebacker. Can To'o To'o and Daniel Batuli really hold up for 4 quarters playing just about every snap at linebacker? That's a big ask. And if Tennessee's not up at halftime, you have an even bigger concern heading into the 3rd and 4th quarters. Tennessee's been outscored in the second half of each of the 4 losses this season. The combined score is 71-19. It's the part of the gap there is what Florida and Georgia did. But Tennessee just has not gotten better as the games have gone along. So Tennessee's defense being able to slow down Mississippi State early, I think it's an absolute must for Tennessee to be able to win this game. But let's see what State does at quarterback. Let's see if they use both guys, and let's see if Tennessee can slow down that run early. Both teams, by the way, in this one are saying we have to run the football. Mississippi State might have a little more confidence that it can run the football.
Josh, real quickly here on Bryce Thompson, I don't think anybody's surprised to see him losing his cool on the field on Saturday night. I find it a little difficult to sort of mesh the Jeremy Banks situation with the Bryce Thompson situation, outside of the fact that one of them's an all-conference type performer and the other one was a third stringer that changed positions. How are fans viewing how Jeremy Pruitt has handled discipline so far this year?
I think overall, maybe it's not right to say most. A lot of fans have kind of just moved on from it. And there were some that were really concerned with that Jeremy Banks video. And there were some that were really concerned with the Bryce Thompson allegations. But I guess the way that I'm answering your question is I don't hear that much about it from Tennessee fans. I think a lot of fans said, okay, that's not a good look for us, but then move on and the focus is on what they get done on the football field. And that was not a good look for Bryce on the field last week either. They're kind of fortunate to have him available for the start of the game this Saturday against Mississippi State. So it's not come up that big of a deal yet, I don't think. But if Tennessee keeps losing, then you know that the off-field stuff can come back up in conversation as well.
Do you think Bryce Thompson should be on the field right now?
I thought they brought him back too early. I thought that there should have been a much greater concern with how things are going with him off the field, considering the multiple very serious allegations. Obviously, Tennessee thought differently with that.
Josh, always a pleasure. We appreciate the insight.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
Josh Ward, WNML in Knoxville.
That was hard to watch, that sequence on Saturday, for me at least. I don't know about you guys, but I see him throw a punch and get into fights on the field, and I'm just... It's hard to watch. I don't know. As a Tennessee alumni, I'm not proud of that. So.
Okay. We will come back and get to the weekend that is in the SEC. And I got a really good feeling about one game. And I've had a good feeling about this one since Sunday afternoon. Details coming up next here on Morning Drive. All right, welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We've got Teron Davenport still coming up this morning. Willie Donick is going to join us. A lot to get to. Coming off the Josh Ward interview, I was thinking about this for the weekend that is in the SEC, and it's a loaded weekend of good games. But I have had this strong feeling since the line came out on Sunday afternoon, going into Sunday evening. That's when college football lines come out, you know, usually around halftime of the late window of the NFL games on a Sunday. And the moment I saw that LSU was a 13-14 point favorite against Florida, I have had the strong feeling that the Gators are going to get housed in Death Valley on Saturday night. Is anybody with me on that?
So I believe you.
Oh, yeah, I'm 100% with you. And I think it's you cannot play a game of that level of physicality against Auburn and put that much energy into an outcome and then expect to do it again against a better team on the road with an injured quarterback. I don't see how it's possible that you can – like, you're coming off this, and LSU's coming off a performance where they played arguably their most complete game defensively and offensively, where they didn't really get challenged by a lesser opponent, and they sort of just cruised. So they're rested. They're ready to go. And you just came off a game where you're blocking Derrick Brown and Marlon Davidson, and, like, you had to battle for every yard. You know, you're physically were sore after that game. I guarantee it. Your quarterback is banged up. I just don't see how you can match the level of energy and intensity. The Swamp was just on fire last week. I just don't see how you match that level of intensity. Now, these games have been close. LSU Florida has been close by and large almost every year. So that's where Vegas is begging you to take Florida plus the 13.5. But I'm with you. This could be, you know, 38-13, you know, somewhere in that territory, 35-10, 35-14, somewhere in there. You know, LSU is going to score, and I don't know if Florida can keep up.
This is going to be a statement game for LSU, I think. This is the game where, you know, I think Ed Orgeron is going to look at it and say, you know what, fellas, this is the game that we got to make a statement. Because after that, they have Auburn and Alabama back-to-back weeks after Mississippi State. Which should be another win for them. But then they got Auburn and Alabama. And just think, if they house Florida, beat Mississippi State, headed into that Auburn game, even though Auburn already have one loss, and I think they would be a 10-12 point favorite against Auburn, all depends on how they play against Florida. That matchup in Tuscaloosa, man, it might be a battle between 1-4.
I just feel like there's something to be said for schedules catching up to you. I felt like Auburn, it caught up to them last week. You know, they've played Oregon, they played Texas A&M, they played Mississippi State. Sooner or later, it catches up to you. You look at Florida, they played Miami, they had a rivalry game against Tennessee. Now, I know they beat them 34-3, and it wasn't competitive, but eventually it starts to catch up to you. And to your point with LSU, you mentioned the teams that are coming up for them. Mm-hmm. Since that game against Texas, they've had a bye. They played Vanderbilt, so we'll call that two byes.
Yeah.
They had Utah State.
Yikes.
They've almost been forgotten about since that Texas moment. They've been off the national radar.
Yeah, and they gave up some yards, you know, certainly to Vanderbilt. They gave up some yards to Texas, certainly. They gave up points to Vanderbilt. Two of those were defensive touchdowns. But what they did to a very good quarterback, and again, Utah State, people are not going to look at a Utah State win and give them much credit for that, but they should. Utah State's one of the better Group of Five teams. Jordan Love is one of the better Group of Five quarterbacks in America. They gave up, I want to say, less than 4 yards per play on defense, which is an astounding number. Three interceptions. They forced turnovers on a good quarterback. That was as complete a showing offensively and defensively that LSU's had all season. So they're coming off a really just kind of breeze through dominating performance. They're rested. They're at home. The other team is coming off. Again, I don't know if it helps them, if the adrenaline helps them from the win last week, but it to me, it felt like a costly victory. Your quarterback gets hurt with the MCL issue. You know, your running game wasn't particularly successful. You had one long run, which is football. I get it. But you largely were averaging two yards a carry against Auburn on defense. How many times did Derrick Brown make a giant play against you? You know, like, I know you've got corners that can match up with LSU's wide receivers, but it just doesn't feel like this is a good, smart spot to be on the Florida side of things. And if Vegas is putting this number at 13, like, I thought it was going to be like 8 or 9. Mm-hmm. And then it comes out at 13.5, and I'm going, well, Vegas is telling you, please put your money down on the Florida Gators.
So they believe they're going to get a house.
Which means they believe that LSU is going to roll. So I don't know. I'm learning more and more about the Vegas lines from hanging out with you this much, Nick. And it's like,
Because the novice bettor is going to sit there and say,
points for Florida.
I just watched Florida beat Auburn. Oh, I love the fact. Give me 13 points.
All right, I'm the student here, and you're the teacher. So let me ask you if this is another one of those. For example, the Seahawks are like a 1.5 point, 2 point favorite on Cleveland. Seattle's surging, coming off a huge win, 4-1. Cleveland doesn't look very good. They get destroyed on a Monday night. People overreact to what they see on national TV. Am I wrong to think that Cleveland plus the 2 is the play here?
Because
Vegas is begging you to take Seattle,
All of the, quote, experts are jumping on Cleveland from a gambling standpoint.
It's the same situation, right? Like, people are overreacting to last week.
But I disagree on that one.
Oh, okay.
I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
If I told you right now, based on the way the Cleveland Browns are playing, are you going to back Freddie Kitchens and Baker Mayfield? Or Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll.
I agree. I'm going with Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll,
of course,
obviously.
But that's what Vegas is trying to get you to bet, because they're making this line so small. You know, why is it? Again, I'm all just trying to, it's us trying to learn sort of, now that gambling's legal and it's more of a thing that we talk about, even though we always kind of talked about it, it's always the opposite of what you think Vegas is telling you. And Seattle minus 1.5 is telling you to take Seattle. Vegas is telling you to take Seattle, which means Cleveland outright in the win. Same thing with LSU and Florida. Vegas is telling you to take Florida, which means they think LSU is going to roll.
Well, yeah, based upon what we could say, you could say, well, they had trouble against Auburn. They had trouble doing, other than that long run. Auburn that was a back and forth game, and Auburn still had an opportunity, you know, to win that game and just didn't do it because Florida made plays. You got to give it up to them; they made plays. But looking at LSU, I just think LSU. If you take away the Alabama receivers with Judy and Ruggs and those guys, this might be the second best group in the country. And Jefferson Chase and Marshall Jr. These guys, each of them have, one has 7 touchdowns, the other 2 have 6, but they're all hovering over 300 yards. One has 5, one has 4, and one has 3. This is an explosive offense, and they've never, even with Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham Jr., they've never had an offense that has been this explosive. And I would put them as far as this trio receivers. Now, they may not be as explosive as Alabama's trio or four guys that they have, but they are a close second.
So Florida LSU is the 7 o'clock ESPN game on Saturday night. Herb Street will be doing that because game day will be down there. But before that, at 2:30 on CBS, is the Bama A&M game. And speaking of Kirk Herbstreit, Herbstreit is getting killed this week on social media for saying that College Station is an overrated home environment.
What? How can he say that?
He says he basically, when's the last time Texas A&M pulled off a big upset at home?
I mean, they've lost all four games to Auburn since joining the SEC at home.
What? But is he saying it's overrated?
I mean, Michigan's overrated, I think.
Because they hadn't won there recently, or is it overrated because the fans are just not loud?
It's definitely loud.
And everything. That's what I'm saying.
It's an awesome environment.
If he's saying, how is he framing it? Because if he's framing it that they hadn't won,
because they have top 25 wins at home, although they haven't had that quote signature one.
And again, the last big win they've had over anybody was Manziel over Bama. That was in Tuscaloosa.
Correct.
In 2011 even maybe. 2012, yeah, it's their first year in the league. But under Kevin Sumlin, I completely agree with him. The team wasn't tough. The Texas A&M wasn't a tough football team under Kevin Sumlin. They were a flash team, right? A lot of flashy parts, a lot of out in space parts, and they didn't have a toughness to them. Jimbo Fisher has given them a toughness. The crowd is spectacular. They are 100,000 plus strong, and they're loud. It's not like Michigan, or even Texas for that matter, although the Texas LSU game, Herbie and those guys were raving about how this is a different Texas situation now. The Longhorns actually feel like a big-time atmosphere, because I went to games in the 90s all the time at Texas, and it was big when the Aggies played, but it wasn't exactly a loud 100,000-seat stadium like LSU or Tennessee or Georgia or whatever, or Auburn even. And Michigan's like that. Michigan's the quietest 100,000-seat stadium you'll ever play.
It's amazing.
I would not have put A&M in that category.
But like, how is he framing?
I put UCLA or USC in that category before Texas
A&M. Yeah, but he says it's overrated, but how? In what context?
A&M's got no chance of beating Bama.
Okay, that home field advantage really don't mean anything in this regard.
Now, I agree that I don't think they have a chance to beat Bama, but that's not because of the crowd.
But I don't think it's because of the crowd. Yeah, I just think Alabama's the better team.
There's football players that are playing the game, and I don't know who's going to cover the receiving corps for Alabama, which is going to be the same thing we're going to say basically every game the rest of the way, is how do you stop Tua? Because you cannot beat Alabama unless you can score 38 points. You can't do it. And so if you can get to 38 against them, then you got a chance, because you know they're going to get to 35. There's just no way you're going to keep Tua and those receivers from less than 35 points or 38 points. So I don't see how A&M makes it that kind of game. I just don't.
Time for another round of silly underdog picks. Make your picks now on the three college football underdogs that you think will win outright this Saturday. Weekly winners get a pair of tickets to an upcoming Nashville sporting event or concert. Silly Underdog Picks is sponsored by the Volunteer Hose and Gasket. You can play at thegamenashville.com or on the ESPN Game Nashville mobile app. We will come back. Nashville Predators with a unbelievable third period last night where they rallied from a 4-2 deficit. They put up a 4 spot in the final 20 to win 6-5. We'll get to that on the other side. It's Morning Drive back after this.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend, because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love, with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.